You are listening to the Flight Test Podcast, Episode 3.
Welcome to the Flight Test Podcast. Flight Test is all about educating, entertaining, and elevating the world of flight. If you like radio control planes, helis, FPV flying, multi-rotors, or scratch building, this podcast was made just for you. All right, everyone, welcome to the very third podcast of Flight Test Podcast.
I like that, very third.
The very, very third. And next will be the very fourth.
It's the first third we've ever had.
Exactly. I have Josh Bixler and David Vindestahl with me today.
Hello.
And I'm Austin Fury. And today we have actually something pretty special for you guys. We're going to be playing a few interviews that we recorded at Neat Fair.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
Yeah, we have a representative from Hobby King.
Stuart.
And from Stuart from Hobby King. We have Sean from High Tech, and we have Eric from Fly RC. So those will be pretty interesting. I'm excited to play those. First, we're going to do a couple of other things. I don't think really any significant introduction is needed.
No, we're just short of Capper.
Yeah, that's true. We're short of Capper and short of Scott.
Yes. Yep.
which you guys knew that this was going to kind of be a...
Rotational.
Yeah, rotational. So it's okay that somebody's not here. We're going to be talking a little bit today about brushless motors. It's going to be our main topic. We're also going to be doing a What's New at Flight Test. We're going to be doing a lightning round Q&A like we've done in the past. So I'd say let's just dig right into brushless motors, where I'm going to be talking the least out of all of us.
I'll be talking the second least, probably making a couple obnoxious comments here and there.
We got part of the reason we wanted this to be our main topic is for the lightning round Q&A. Lots of times on Facebook, facebook.com/flighttest, that's where we kind of pump out our request for questions. And one of the top rated questions was questions about brushless motors and about prop sizes in proportion to engine sizes and that sort of thing. So we're just going to address that. We get that a lot.
We're crazy blessed to have an immensely talented Swedish guy here. And anytime he pumps out technical information with this cool accent, it just sinks into your brain so much better.
I hope so.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then how come you still don't follow the...
Because I don't care.
That's true.
So no pressure. No pressure, guys.
You know what? I'm the stress tester, remember? I'm the one that says how good the motors are because how irresponsibly I prop them.
Yeah, it's funny because you never measure the current.
But I really don't have that many in-flight failures, do I?
No, that's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah.
So, anyway, there's... That's Austin taking off his jacket in a very seductive way.
Sorry, I was just trying to be quiet. Ended up being seductive. Sorry. All right, there we go. We're done.
Need some saxophone music.
Yeah, there was a lot of questions on Facebook, and there's quite a few interesting things about a brushless motor compared to a combustion engine. I actually don't have much experience with the combustion stuff.
Yeah.
But you do.
Yeah.
So what happens... If you have a combustion engine and you put a too small of prop on.
Overheats, over revs.
Yes. But why?
Why? Well, because it's working too freely. It needs to have the right amount of work.
Yeah, because a combustion engine has a certain amount of power that it puts out.
Yes.
Period. It has that, and you have to load that motor down to be able to draw out that power. Otherwise, it's going to go into destroying the motor.
Into crazy mode.
Brushless motors work kind of the opposite. If you put a smaller prop on it, it's just going to spin easier because a brushless motor wants to spin at a certain RPM. And if it can do that in a very easy way, it's going to draw less current. So that's because, let's see if I can phrase this properly. I don't have any notes. Sorry about that.
It's okay. You're on the spot. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, it's fine. It's just a million people listening, right?
Doing great. Well, actually, what are we up to? 3,000?
No, we're up to 10,000 downloads.
Wow. Thank you, guys.
Thanks. This podcast. So,
pressure, David.
I'm not really sure what I expected, but 10,000, yeah. I think it's great.
That's really cool.
So, a brushless motor, when you run it without a prop on it, it spins at its KV, which is the KV rating is how many
revolutions
per minute it's going to do per volt applied to it. That's like the speed that motor wants to turn. The bigger the prop you put on it, the more power you're going to draw out of it because it wants to go to that KV number.
Has to do more work, in other words.
Yeah, to get to that spinning point, it has to do more work. Whereas it's the opposite with the internal combustion, and you have a certain amount of power, you have to draw it out, otherwise you destroy the motor. Here's the opposite. If you put a too big a prop on a brushless motor, it's just a big prop is going to burn it up. A small prop, it's not going to do anything
bad. So you can actually free rev a brushless motor when you test it. You can go up to full throttle.
That's no problem.
There you go. You heard it here.
Yeah, except there's stuff always. I mean, it's... Yeah, you can do that. That's fine.
Okay. I don't know why you'd want to do it, but...
Yeah, if you have a ridiculously high KV motor, if it's freewheeling really fast, there might be some exceptions, but not really.
Okay.
But do you know... You know, if you measure a brushless motor... two leads on it. It has three leads. If you measure between two leads with an ohmmeter, have you done that?
There's a resistance there.
Yes.
Okay.
Do you know how much that resistance is?
No.
It's pretty small, right?
Yeah.
It's 0.0014 ohms, for instance, depending on the
motor. It has to have some resistance. If it has none, you have a problem, right?
You have a... That would be awesome, actually.
That's higher efficiency.
Yeah, because depends on if you have zero resistance, you get into superconductors, and that wouldn't generate any heat. So that would be great. But anyway,
like a vacuum in space.
Wow, I'm doing a really poor job.
No, I'm just distracting you.
Anyway, if you measure a brushless motor and you measure two leads, 0.0014 or 12 or whatever ohms is a very small amount of resistance. If you have a voltage applied, the formula to calculate most stuff in electronics is V equals I times R. It's how much power your system is going to draw. So your voltage is constant because the battery is, let's say that's a constant, 12 volts. And then you have the resistance, that's also a constant. It's not changing. So that's 0.12 ohms. Then it's only the current that can change in this scenario. And if you apply this formula, you would draw around 1,000 amps.
Wow, that's a lot of amps.
That's a lot of amps. Let's say 1,000. Okay. 100 or 1,000. Who cares?
Well,
it doesn't matter. The motor doesn't like it.
Yeah.
That's what happens when the brushless motor is at a standstill and you apply full throttle to it.
So if you hold your prop still and you apply full throttle...
Something's going to pop.
Yes.
Either the motor or the speed controller.
Or your wallet.
Yes, or both. Or all three. So why is that the motor, when it spins, doesn't draw all those amps?
I'd say because the energy is momentary.
How do you mean by that?
Well, I think the speed controller is actually turning on and off the energizing, what would you call it, zone maybe? What would you call that?
A phase?
A phase. I like that. I would say it's because the speed controller is switching it on and off very quickly.
Yeah, you have a point, which is kind of...
I'm guessing, by the way. I'm totally guessing.
We're going to get to that. But what happens is when the brushless motor spins, it acts like a generator.
Okay.
It generates a back voltage into the coil.
Okay.
And that voltage is pretty high, actually. So the difference in the voltage it generates and the voltage that is fed into it, the difference is so minute, depending on how much you're loading down that motor, that voltage, which could be 0.2 volts difference, times 0.012 ohms, would be the current that you're currently drawing.
The silence here is my mind exploding. That's pretty cool. So you got something, a battery feeding in.
Yep.
You got voltage being generated, kind of canceling out that crazy amperage you're talking about.
Yeah.
And thus we get a happy, efficient running motor that doesn't explode and kill puppies.
Yes.
Cool.
That's why you put a bigger prop on it. It can't spin as fast.
Okay.
Therefore, it's generating less voltage. The voltage difference is bigger. Therefore, it draws more amps. Drawing more amps means more magnetic power. Trying to drive that motor forward, it wants to be at an equilibrium between the input voltage and the generated voltage in the motor.
Now, David, my hat's off to you because I'm a simple-minded person, and I actually got what you said there.
Oh, that's good. I hope, there's going to be a surprise test after
that. That was pretty darn awesome, because I always just thought that, the bigger the prop, the harder it had to work, the slower it turned. And because the slower it turned, it was drawing more amps. Now, that's correct, but the reason why was totally opposite of what I thought. So good job, man.
No, thank you. That's and if you understand that, that's actually a keystone in the hobby. If you understand the electronics, you know what to do with it, so to speak.
Yeah.
You're going to stop blowing up stuff. They're, on brushless motors, they have a rating, right?
Yeah.
That rating is directly proportional to the amount of copper inside of it. Because the copper, the windings, can only take a certain amount of power. Because I squared times R equal the power loss in that wire. And if it can't take that power, more copper means it can take more power because there's more mass there that can take it.
That's why bigger motors are bigger.
That's because, bigger motors can take more, can draw more
current. They have to be bigger because there's more copper in them.
Yes, they're more copper, and also they generate more powerful electric field. Therefore, you can have a bigger prop on a bigger motor,
nice,
so to speak. So, a bigger motor is going to be more efficient at certain ranges than a small brushless motor. Or actually, a bigger brushless motor is nearly always more efficient because it has more copper in it. But the downside is you can't fit that on a small plane.
Yeah, very unfortunate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So from a practical perspective, if you're flying an RC airplane, you know that your motor size is appropriate for the weight and size of that airplane. But you land and your brushless motor hasn't exploded, but it's hot.
It's very hot?
Yes. Well, what is the solution as far as prop size goes for that?
Reduce the prop size, either the pitch or the diameter. And the diameter on a prop, the formula for calculating how much load a prop puts on a motor is the diameter times the diameter times the pitch.
Mm-hmm. Diameter times the diameter times the pitch.
Yes.
So diameter squared
times
pitch.
Yes.
Okay.
So if you reduce the diameter, that's going to have a pretty significant...
Twice the effect, roughly. I mean, actually exponentially twice as the pitch.
Yes.
Cool.
Which is... So if you reduce the...
Actually got that.
Oh, cool.
Made sense.
Yeah. So you have to go down in size of the prop or increase the size of your motor and speed controller. The key here is the 80% rule. If you draw more, there is a spec on the motor, never exceed 80% of that spec. So when you plug it,
these are the funniest things.
Same as batteries, same with speed controllers. Always follow that, and you're going to have a good time. The military specs everything at 50% from what the manufacturers say, which is almost always
under-specced
as well.
Yeah.
That's why their stuff lasts.
Right.
80% is going to last you a long time.
I know Hobby King, their plush series, they under-spec those considerably.
Yes, they do.
I know.
Depends on which way you're looking at it. But yes, they are under-spec.
Yeah. I've tested this a lot.
Yeah. No. But still, even if it says a brushless speed controller is not, it says it's capable of 60 amps, it's not going to pump 60 amps to the motor regardless. The motor draws the power through the speed controller from the battery. That's it. It's just it's like a floodgate or...
So correct me if I'm wrong, brother. The prop detects the amount of work the motor has to do.
Yep.
The motor depicts how much current is drawn from the speed control, and that's all supplied by the battery.
Yes, the battery. Yeah, that's exactly the chain. So the prop size, all depends on the prop size, mm-hmm. How much you're going to draw from that battery.
Yeah. Prop decides the motor. Motor decides speed control. Speed control decides kind of the battery because you need something to feed the whole mess.
Yeah, more or less.
Nice.
It's actually it's really good because if you need to choose a speed controller, now we're going into the whole power system, but the speed controller, there's nothing bad in using a 2,000 amp speed controller except the weight on your plane.
It's just, what do you want to explode? Do you want to explode your motor? Do you want to explode your speed controller? What about your battery?
Under spec everything to 80%. and nothing's going to blow, okay? Yeah.
The magic word today is 80%.
This episode brought to you by the letter...
number 8, yeah. Or number 80. Yeah.
Ooh.
That's really it. Yeah. There's so many different ways of choosing the brushless speed controller and motor and brushless speed controller. It's all depending on the size of the model.
Now, brother, I gotta really tip my hat to you. Looking at all you've explained here, I can understand why your face gets so red when you see some of my airplanes, because I realize, you know, I've lived a sinful hobby life, and I'm sorry for that.
The weird thing is that it works. The weird thing.
It doesn't always. I actually have a pretty good track record of not having too many failures.
Yeah, it's actually doing pretty good. When we're on the brushless.
Yeah,
A person asked, I can't remember who it was, on the Facebook asked,
yeah,
why does switching two of the leads reverse the rotation of the motor?
Yeah.
Can you explain that?
Well, I have to imagine zones. It's probably, I got to imagine, this is my guess, which is probably going to be wrong. Imagine you have zone 1, 2, 3, or ABC.
Yeah.
That would be a pattern, wouldn't it? If you change any two of those, the pattern will change reversed.
Can you explain that a little bit more plainly?
No, I can't. Okay. my guess is, like, if you're saying 1-2-3, 1-2-3, and those zones are energized in a 1-2-3 order, which they probably are not.
They are.
Oh, they are? Oh,
yeah.
Cool.
That's cool. Yeah, because you have this brushless speed controller. It's going to energize 1-2-3, 1-2-3. Yeah.
So if you change two of them, like 1-3-2-1-3-2-1, it's now reversed that pattern.
Yes.
Because, did I get it?
Yeah. Well, it's kind of funny.
Sorry, I just spiked that.
If you take pen and paper and you write 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, that's a progressive pattern from that's rising 1, 2, 3, and 1, 2, 3, and 1, 2, 3. And if you switch any two of those numbers around and you write those down again, so you have 2, 1, 3, 2, 1, 3. If you read that, it's going to be 3-2-1, 3-2-1, 3-2-1. And that's a descending order. Therefore, it spins the opposite way.
I am so going to write this in my baby book. That's so really cool.
Yeah, it's just it's a very logical, simple way of thinking.
The word of the day is zones.
It's actually phases.
Phases.
Yeah.
Phases.
It technically energizes it because you have a backfeeding pole as well. So you have 1-2... 2-3, 3-1, and it could be you have to have the back lead as well, so it gets more complicated, but it doesn't really matter.
Can I have a request for maybe one of the future episodes? Now that we're talking about motors, you actually have my interest really piqued, because before I just didn't care because it worked, but now I'm kind of motivated to be responsible. But I would love to know, maybe next episode, how do windings bring KVs, because the more you wind or the way you wind it, it depicts your KV.
Yeah.
So we got to save that for next time. Can we do that next time, though?
That's cool.
All right.
So I hope you answered all your questions, which we probably
no.
Yeah. I was being rude and interrupting you. Why don't you just recap really quick?
Well, I think you recapped really good.
Oh, did I?
Well, before we recap, which, yes, Josh, sure, recap, can we cover, or can you guys cover really quick, basically, we just kind of cheated and just covered a lot of questions some main questions that we had. But it makes for a main topic, because a lot of people are asking that. But another question that I feel is related was a question about lipos. And the question was, what is your method, procedure for maintaining, balancing, charging, safety, and travel for lipos?
I'm actually the expert about this.
Yeah, so I'm going to pass this to John.
Okay, what you need to do is you fly until this thing called the LVCO comes on. That's low voltage cutout. Okay? Once you get to that point, that is when the battery is like, yes, I am happy here. And you go full throttle. Okay, full throttle is necessity, because that is going to keep your plane in the air. How am I doing?
Stress testing.
Pretty bad.
Yeah. You will have a round battery like me, my friends.
Yes. When you put them on a table, they escape.
They don't escape, they roll.
Yeah, they're like... And so the key thing here is the 80% rule again.
80%, friends.
Yeah, so when you land, have a charger that tells you the milliamps you put back into it.
Okay.
That way, you know, if I flew this long... Mm-hmm. That's going to draw this amount of current through this many milliamps through my batteries. And you rate that at 80%. So if you have a 1,000 milliamp battery, you only draw 800 milliamps through that battery, otherwise it's not going to be happy.
The HK010, I have that actually, and it's awesome because you plug it in and it immediately tells you the percentage.
Yeah, a LiPo tester that actually tells you the percentage is actually pretty good.
Yeah,
it's not as accurate as the as measuring the milliamps you put back in because it's only there's it's just a. It measures the voltage and it guesses more or less. It has a so if your battery is old and bad, it's actually going to show a different reading.
Because you may never get it back up to 100%, which actually probably rarely ever happens, does it?
Yeah, because whenever a LiPo battery is, was there about storage in there in that question?
Not particularly, but just maintaining. So that would include storage.
So whenever you store a battery, you don't want to drain it completely, and you don't want it to be...
Put it in the freezer.
No. don't leave it at 100% either, because a battery is a chemical process or a chemical compound, and there's a metal plate in the middle. If you leave that charged for too long, it's going to eat the plate. The opposite is true. If it's too discharged, it's going to eat the plate from the other side, more or less.
Really?
Yes.
That's awesome.
So leave it charged at around 30 to 40% charged. And another really important thing is to store it in a cold environment. If you want to keep as much as possible of that capacity, because if you leave a battery fully charged and out in, let's say you live in Florida and you leave it in your car over the summer, you're going to lose probably 60% of that capacity. Easy, 60 to 80%. I can't remember. There's documents on the internet. You can actually look this up pretty easily. You lose so much, and it's actually, every chemical process is sped up by heat. That's just basic chemistry. So what you want to do is, if you store it in a cooler, if you have one in your garage that you don't normally use that much, throw your batteries in there when you want to store them long term. A cold LiPo, if you want to try and fly with that, that's really bad. It doesn't.
I have a guess of that. Is it because reactions happen faster when it's warm?
Yes.
It happens slower when it's cold, so it doesn't discharge and give you the
exactly. Energy. That's why you need to heat them up. You put them in your pocket and you heat it up before your flight. That's why I always look so funny, because I have stuff in my back pockets and I look like I have a really nice ass.
I'm happy you said that in Swedish. Hopefully people didn't hear that. That's just
okay,
creepy.
So what was the other question? Balancing. Always balance the batteries if you can. That's really good. Plug it into the charger that has the balancing lead, because the middle cells don't get as much cooling as the outer cells. Therefore, the middle cell is going to be hotter. Therefore, it's going to discharge quicker.
Thus makes an unbalanced battery.
Yes. And the more, when you charge a battery, if they're unbalanced, it's going to get worse, because those other two cells is going to, especially if you charge it normally, those are going to go over the voltage.
Which is what, 4.2, right? Is the magic number?
Yes, 4.2. They're going to, let's say they go up to 4.3, which is over spec, while the middle cell is at 4. Mm-hmm. So next time you discharge it, that middle cell is going to discharge even more. Next time you put it on the charger, it's going to get even worse. Luckily, they self-balance pretty good, but it's always good practice to balance at least every 10 flights.
Nice. Now, one thing I always do is whenever I do finally puff my batteries really effectively, and I got to make it a single cell, I always go for that center cell, because the other ones are just round as eggs, and the center one's nice and flat. I'm guessing it's probably because it's squeezed that way, not because it wants to be that way.
Usually it's just because of the things I said. That cell discharges more that one time when you push that battery really hard, and then when you charge it, it's not overcharged each time.
Oh, nice.
So it's actually doing better than the poor cells on the outside.
It's poor guys.
Yeah, just squeeze between two bad cells.
So, Mr. Bixler, good luck summarizing all that. But what's the summary from what
summary
we learned today?
Is heat is bad, 80% rule. So, and the truth is told in what you put in and not what you take out.
Yep.
I'm looking for the sweet to not his head. to have a nice curvature on your buttocks, put your batteries in your back pocket.
When it's cold.
When it's cold. Warm up before you you fly in the winter. And a cooler is an excellent storage device because you don't want to leave it in the hot car like I do.
Yeah, long term.
Long term.
It's long term.
Oh, and the last thing is do not top off your batteries or leave them totally dead. Leave them, you said 30 to 40%.
Yeah.
Something around that. That probably begs another question. You get an airplane, it's ready to fly, you know, say it's park zone or whatever, and you're so eager to fly, you don't bother putting that battery on the charger while you're building it, and you just pop it in and go fly it. That's not good.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Be responsible.
Yeah,
and also, the motor, can you recap the motor stuff we talked about?
The motor is as much a generator as it is a receiver of energy. Is that fairly accurate to say that? Without it spinning hard, it doesn't generate the counter energy to keep it from going to 1,000 million amps, and that's blowing up your motor. So the bigger the prop, the more energy it takes, the less it can counteract that other energy, and you burn up your wire. The more copper, the more efficient, and also the more power. And KV is the number of RPMs per minute per volt. An 80% rule on that one, too.
Cool.
So the prop depicts the motor depicts the speed control depicts the battery.
More or less. Yeah.
That was good.
Yeah,
that's pretty informative.
Josh got a lot better at that than I am.
I feel like we just answered a lot of questions.
I want to hug you both right now.
We made everyone more confused.
Yeah, right.
Let us know for the next podcast. And David, I'm sorry for interrupting you so much. But
no, it's good.
You taught me something, brother.
Yeah, no, that's the point of talking.
Well, for now, we're going to try to spread out these three interviews over the length of the podcast. So we're going to go to our first interview from Neat Fair.
Would be Hobby Kings.
Yes, that would be Hobby Kings. So we're going to be listening to Josh, David, myself.
And Stuart.
And Stuart Warren.
We don't know Stuart's last name.
Stuart Warren.
Stuart Warren is his last name.
He is the creative lead and videographer for Hobby King. And he is also, which we learned during the podcast, is the brand manager for Duralfly.
Guy wears a lot of hats.
So he does all that for Hobby King. So we're excited to hear from Stuart. So let's go ahead and roll that.
All right.
Okay, everyone. Welcome to this next segment of the Flight Test Podcast.
Kind of a different location, isn't it?
Yes. We are in a very, very nice RV.
Yeah, nicer than we ever dreamed it would be.
Or deserve.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the RV people were foolish enough to let us drive off with it.
We couldn't believe. 15 minutes on the road, like, they would never have rented this to us if they realized. But that's not what we're talking about. We're at Neat Fair.
Yes. We're here at Neat Fair in Downsville, New York.
Mm-hmm.
And we have with us Stuart from Hobby King.
Hello.
Which many of you may recognize his voice or image from Hobby King Live.
Yeah, I'm the annoying English one on the channel.
It's so hard to tell who's English and who's Australian.
If you're English, it's easy to tell. Anyone else, yeah, I can understand that.
We love accents. That's why we love Dave so much. So we're really bad at imitating people, too.
True.
Stuart, what do you do, brother? I know you're the face behind Hobby King Live, but I'm sure you wear a lot of hats.
First hat is head of video production, so that's my main bag. That's what I train in. I worked in the film industry for 7 or 8 years out in London in post-production. But I wanted to spend less time in a dark edit suite. That became really depressing. And I wanted to make my passion my job. So I approached Hobby King, and they wanted me to take on board the video production and the video side of things, but also they saw just how much of a nut I am for RC. Even in my wedding, I had a multiplex Funk Hub, and I rigged up a box underneath it, and I dropped confetti over the procession.
Nice.
So I wanted to make sure the family knew what their daughter was getting into.
Level of crazy is very high from the very beginning.
Yeah, so absolutely. And then with the RC stuff, I've now taken on Duralfly. I'm the brand manager for Duralfly.
Good job on that, brother.
That's my baby. And
it's a big job.
Yeah.
It's a big job. Trying to split the two is quite difficult sometimes.
Are you one of the gentlemen that are coming out? Because the thing I love about the Duralfly line, it's not just a cookie-cutter plane, a P-51 that's silver. They're really unique models that are historical value, and just you don't see them on the flying field.
No, we pride ourselves on trying to be a little bit left-field. We try to bring out models that other companies perhaps don't have the balls to do. We've got the facilities to do so, and we've got the imagination for that. And there's so many cool projects coming up. I literally can't tell you, but
well, trust me, we're not recording right now. Well, you're my hero when you came out of the DH-88. I love the DH-88.
It's a nice plane. It's a nice plane. And we've got a new twin that's coming out very soon. Ooh. The BF-110, Messerschmitt BF-110.
Nice.
And that's, it almost looks like, I thought it was a B-24 at first. And it's like, that's not a B-24. That's a Messerschmitt.
It's definitely German. And there's a bit of work in it. It is plug and fly, but it needs a little bit of work to get it up and running.
Nice.
But that said, that shouldn't detract from the fact that it is actually a very, very nice flyer.
Well, and being the fact that it's not a cookie cutter airplane, you guys are obviously doing everything in house.
We take a concept. We have a board, an ideas board.
Yeah.
And on that board, we throw up a load of ideas and we talk about them. And then from that list, we pick one or two to go forward with. Mm-hmm. And then we approach our factories and they draw up 3D images of that. And at that stage, we suggest any changes. And then from there, it goes to the CNC. The CNC is all about testing the airframe, seeing that it flies right. Any changes you want to make, you need to make at that point.
Okay.
Because otherwise, you get to mold stage where you open the mold, that becomes very expensive.
Right.
And very frustrating if you want to make changes at that point.
You're committed then.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
So it's got to be right in the CNC. And then with the CNC, you have phase one of the mold. From that point, further testing, obviously the weight changes because the polystyrene that we use for the CNC is much lighter, so then when the entire mass of the aircraft increases in EPO stage, we need to look at it again, see how it flies, and check that we've not got CG issues and stuff like that. And then there's a second mold after that, which is the pre-mass production sample. We start thinking of paint schemes and everything else and specking out fully, and then we go into mass production. And that process can be anything between... Well, on a good run, we've had it down to 5 months, but typically it takes around 9 to 12 months.
Wow.
Yeah, and there's a lot of projects on the book right now. I think yet to be announced and still being developed, there are, I think, around 9 or 10 projects for coming models for Durafly.
Wow.
So it's going to be an exciting end of the year, and next year is going to be awesome. We've got some really cool stuff coming.
Durafly has definitely taken a stand to truly be its own brand.
Absolutely. Amazing. And yes, we do the scale stuff, and we do it well. We think we like what we do there, but we're looking to diversify as well. We've got some really nice F3A types and 3D type models coming out, non-scale, just good sports flyers. And some unusual things like the Auto G and the Auto G2. I'm sure you guys have seen that.
Oh, yeah.
And then some other unusual stuff later on down the line. Yeah.
Well, you definitely have a lot of work to do and keeping busy, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in the States now for a month, all the way to October. Wow. So my inbox is going to be taking a pounding while I'm away.
Wow. What was your experience in EAT?
Great show. I mean, I grew up reading magazine articles of NEAT. When electric was still very much in the pioneering phase, you've got the brushed motors, you've got the NIMS and everything else. And when Hobby Lobby used to sponsor this event, and they were always bringing some very nice European models. And I've always wanted to be here. It was like a show that I thought, well, okay, I'll never get there, but it would be awesome if I could. Yeah. And now I'm here. I think it's changed a little now, but it's still got a great vibe about it.
People are the best part.
Yeah, absolutely.
People. We had 2 days of rain and just crummy cold weather.
It wasn't nice
to fly, but boy, it was nice to catch up and communicate with people. And this hobby is just pumped full of some of the greatest people on the earth.
There's some real characters here and some amazing models as well. And you're still seeing unique models here, like people that have got real innovations, and it's really good to see. Rather than sticking to that straight out of the box plug and fly thing, which is great, that serves a purpose, but it's really nice to see innovative people and designs coming out. Like you guys with your like big wings that I saw.
that was awesome.
Yeah, very, very cool.
I'm sorry, I think last night we hit some of your planes, and I'm sorry about that.
David got the walrus smack on.
David
but it's
killed
fixed.
The walrus. Cuckoo, ca-choo.
it's all fun and games.
That was fun. And you know what? Something that's been funny is we are literally 8 inches?
From you
guys.
Yeah. and not much room.
That's spurred on a whole other avenue of conversations I found. And you guys probably had it too. People are coming up like, you know you're next to Hobby King, right? And they're like, yeah, we know that. And they're like, is that okay? And I was talking to Toby.
Toby, our VP,
great guy. And I said, Toby, what's the deal here? People think that there's a rift between us.
Well, they can't be. We're only eight inches apart.
I mean, literally, we could sneak into your... your RV right now.
It would make things awkward.
But yeah. I guess this is a great opportunity to explain Flight Test Heart and maybe hear Hobby King's heart too. Mm-hmm. There is definitely no rift between us.
No, absolutely not.
The biggest thing is with us going independent was how can we say that there's an exceptional product when we're getting paid by that company? Mm-hmm. And people wouldn't take our word for it. We wanted to be honoring to the brand. And if we say this plane is exceptional, we mean it. The best way to do that is without taking any funding. And the viewers were amazing. They said, yes, this is what we want, and they funded us. But Hobby King was never part of the equation that we didn't want to be involved with them. We always wanted to have a relationship. You guys are responsible for bringing so many new people into the hobby.
I think it's
an amazing thing that we should trumpet that, and especially with the way it almost seems like Hobby King is coming into a new direction.
Yeah, we're expanding, we're developing. We've got an East Coast warehouse in the US that we're
opening soon.
Yeah, looking to get in motion in the next couple of months, maybe early into next year.
They were shared with me, and we will edit this out. But your desire is to make it where anywhere in the USA, someone can get their package within about a couple of days.
Yes, ideally. I mean, it's a big mountain to climb, but we want to do it because, you know, we do value our customers, and we want to give them what they're asking for, and they're also asking for better CS, and we understand that.
Yeah.
We're modelers too. We get frustrated by the same issues that anybody has. Yeah, exactly. And we are looking at a CS solution or an addition to CS in America. Mm. So that should be rolling out at some point. Not too many details on that at this point, but it's definitely something that we're always conscious of. And we do value our customers. We definitely want to keep them happy.
Well, definitely going to be doing great things for the hobby in the future. I love what you're doing with the new line. I shouldn't say the new line. Durafly is not old. You're just really...
No. It's just growing. It's in terms of where it is now and where I want it to be, it's still very much in its infancy.
Yeah.
But as long as we keep challenging... other manufacturers, because competition is good, because that makes them work harder, which benefits the customer. That's the bigger picture, so we're all about that as well.
Love it. Well, Stuart, I gotta thank you for your time, brother, and hopefully we got to just show you guys a little bit of Hobby King's heart, and also dispel any rumors. Flight Test loves Hobby King, and hopefully Hobby King loves Flight Test.
No, absolutely, because when you guys spoke to us and said, look, we want to go independent, we understood that completely, because you're right. It's that if you're reviewing a product, you need to have that sincerity, and that only comes from being independent. So, of course, we understand that.
That's wonderful. Well, I think it's safe to say, obviously, in our Scratch Build series, you see a lot of our Hobby King product. The 9-gram servos, the Hextronic 24 grams, the DT750, which is on that huge wing right now.
Right.
And I'm safe to say I think we'll be reviewing a lot more of your product, too.
Well, that's the thing. They go hand in hand, just like we do. You know, you do column A, we do column B, and they come together, and you know, it's good match. Stuff.
It's very complimentary.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Stuart, we got a noontime demo we got to do, so we're going to let you go. But thank you so much for your time.
Well, you're welcome.
And I look forward to doing it again.
Okay, handshake.
You guys can't say this, but we're actually shaking
right hands. Over the microphone.
Yeah. And we're going to go fly.
Yeah, all right.
All right, guys.
Thanks, man. Woo!
So let's do in between our next interview, which is with Sean Spiker from High Tech. Let's do a what's new at Flight Test, because we're always up to new things, and even if it doesn't feel new to us, believe it or not, it is new to the people listening. Shocker. Yeah,
there's something new every day. Yeah. Are we actually doing the podcast now?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Oh, cool.
Oh, we're back.
We're back.
No transition, baby.
We just jumped right into it. I didn't know if we were brainstorming here.
Nope.
Wow. See, I'm new to the whole podcast thing.
We're back in it. So let's do a what's new in Flight Test, and I have a couple ideas we can talk about, but for now, let's just talk about what you guys
want to talk about.
The Kraken release. Yeah. By the way, I got to tip my hat to my favorite dear Swedish friend for naming it the Kraken, because I would have come up with something really, really lame, and... He has a way of coining terms that seem to get repeated a lot by people. So
plus, when it takes off, you can't not say release the Kraken.
Yeah. Why don't you share the story of the that, in case people didn't see the whole episode?
Oh, right. Yeah, the Neat Fair. We were at the Neat Fair, and Josh's like, I don't know what I'm going to call this. And, okay, I'm taking off. Release the Kraken!
Yeah.
Because, I mean, when he says it
Swedishly, it's so much cooler.
And people are like, oh, it's called the Kraken. So
that
stuck.
Yeah, then he started chanting, kill the Kraken, which I did not appreciate, because I really wanted to take the Kraken home with me.
It is not possible to kill the Kraken.
That we're fine.
You release the Kraken to kill other things.
Well, speaking of killing the Kraken, and that being the not the mythical animal, but the twin engine wing,
foam wing.
Foam wing.
Yes.
Is it Do we want to talk about the upcoming episode at all?
Yeah, we have an exciting upcoming. Actually, David and I, God bless having a crazy Swede, and also we're blessed with Josh Scott that he has dreamed of weaponizing an airplane ever since the DX8 review. If you don't know what I'm talking about, go back and watch the DX8 review.
Yeah,
that has been his long-term dream. And behind the scenes story is that the H Quad was never meant to be an airframe that we did a review on. I solely designed the H Quad to carry a machine gun, airsoft machine gun.
Yep.
And I had it, but then the whole drone talk came by and everyone got really hyper and we're like, no.
We're not doing that.
Yeah. All right. So fast forward to now.
Yeah. So we, since you had that laying around, you brought it in.
Yep. And brought the machine gun in.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, so.
Dave knew where I was going with it.
Yep. So I'm like, oh, we're going to put that on a pan servo.
Yes.
And we're going to have an FPV set up on that. And you're going to fly the other one. Yes. FPV. And Josh Scott is going to steer the gunner.
Episode, literally, with 3 minutes of us just talking, the episode literally designed itself.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Yeah. So I'm going to fly another Kraken behind it and try and paint him with
a marker.
Yeah. So it's going to be a fun episode. So we're shooting that Thursday.
Yeah. And Dave used his awesome pan from the X8. You dove right into that X8.
You did a
lobotomy on the thing.
Yeah, I don't care about the X8 anyway. So
he chopped the pan out of that. So we have a beautiful smooth pan on it.
A lot of airplanes get cannibalized around here. That seems to be a common theme.
You want to know what happens to our airplanes when we're done with them? We kill them.
Usually they die on their own.
Yeah. All right. So that's going to be a good episode.
Yeah, the H Quad. You mentioned the H Quad, and Chad is actually designing a small H Quad.
Yeah, it's just a baby.
Yeah, and that's coming out soon too.
Yeah, we're in the testing stages of that.
Yep. And something that is not going to be an episode probably, I got an RC car with FPV on it.
David crossed over.
Yeah, actually did. So it's a Truxus Summit that I drive around, and we made a little course in the backyard. It is so much fun.
You drive around. It's not line of sight, though.
No. I sit. There's a 60-inch TV that I sit inside and drive around outside when it's bad weather.
I got to admit, it's pretty darn cool.
It is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Let's see. The glider build-off is still happening.
Still happening.
Because of weather.
Yeah, sadly, when you guys see the glider build off, there's going to be colored leaves in the air. So it's not going to be really good thermaline weather.
Probably not, but I'm still going to beat you.
Yeah, you will be.
Next interview is with Sean Spiker.
Yep.
That is correct. Real quick, there was a question about the beginner series and the development of that.
Right.
Where are we at with that?
The first episode's coming out tentatively when?
And
7th was?
No, 16th.
16th?
October 16th, I think.
Yeah,
we hope that still applies. We're shooting. We weren't happy with the first take that we did. We already shot the first episode, edited it, and it didn't feel live.
Yeah,
so we're shooting that again Thursday as well.
Our heart is honestly to try to keep it, but when we change the format where it has a lot more education than entertainment, we just want to make sure we honor that.
Yes. So it's tough.
Those are going to be very, very full episodes, and we want to make sure we do them justice. So
a lot of meat.
Even if that means redoing an episode, we'll do it.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So let's go ahead and transition to Sean Spiker, who is the sales manager for High Tech.
He is awesome.
He's a great friend of ours, and if you ever go to a High Tech tent at any RC event, odds are you'll see Sean.
Yep. And shout out to Mike and Sam Swink as well.
Yes. He still likes you after you hit his carbon fiber prop that one time at Nome.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
I'm amazed.
Yeah, that was fun. He is a great pilot.
Amazing.
He is really funny. So, yes.
Check out the interview.
Yep. Let's roll it. Okay, everyone. Welcome to our next segment of the Flight Test Podcast. Here we have Sean Spiker, who is the sales manager for High Tech.
Yep.
So how's your experience been at NeFair so far this year?
Tell you what keeps us coming back to this event is we have a lot of fun. The people are so much fun. Everyone's super cool to us. They know our product. I mean, we have a hardcore following out here. So when we come out here, people come up to us with our airplanes, with the radios, of course, with the servos, and now with all the chargers out there. So I heard here at NeFair that everybody's charger sounds exactly the same when their battery's done. It's because they're all high-tech chargers. So
your display with your high-tech chargers, I was like wanting to play with the little touchscreen one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I was on. So, but we have so much fun at this event. And, you know, a lot of these events we go to throughout the year, we have a good time, but they're a lot of work.
Sure. Yeah.
This is one of those events where the work is less and the fun is more, so that's what keeps us coming back. We just have such a good time here, and it's a long trek for us. So we're probably the second or third, furthest trek to get out here. I mean, it's San Diego's
about opposite ends of the United States.
Nice. So it's a little bit of an adventure to get here between the flights, between renting an RV and getting all our stuff out here. But in the end, it's always worth it, and it's just like, there's no question about it. We always want to go to Neat Fair.
You're one of the big reasons we came to Neat Fair, because we were at Knoll with you getting to spend an evening, and you're like, you got to come to Neat Fair. You kept saying that, you got to come to Neat Fair. Yep. You said enough times it stayed in our
head. Well, I'm glad the weather kind of held out. I was a little bit worried, because I'm like, oh, man, I told the flight test guys to come here, and it's raining, and it's probably going to flood. But no, the weather held up Saturday. It was a little bit chilly, but the rain held off most of the time. Everybody got to fly from sun up and then well after sundown.
Yeah,
it's been a lot of fun. Glad you guys can make it.
Yeah. Yeah, we also love the fact with the rain and everything coming, it gives us the opportunity to talk to people.
Like you said earlier,
the people were the biggest reason to come here. There's so much fun. There's so much going on with them.
There's a passionate group of people that come to this event year after year. And it's kind of unlike any other spot in the country. Yeah. So, again, that's part of the reason that keeps us coming back.
So we were out doing a new time demo just it's still going on. Yes, yeah, 3 minutes ago. We just ran into the RV and recorded a segment. But you actually invited us to fly some planes.
Yeah, you're crazy, by the way.
Well, it's a good thing we have a warehouse full of airplanes, so you're not too worried about losing one here and there. And as much fun as we have at events, losing an airplane is not unheard of.
Yeah.
But I trusted you guys. The level of talent to go out and for a noontime demo, take planes that,
we never touched them before.
Yeah, never touched them before. We just put them into the radio. They had not been trimmed.
I had to do a
last-minute repair to one.
But that's a testimony also to your great products. For many people, they take their package out, they put the radios in, they fly it. That was the best way to show what a first-time experience.
And what you guys did a great job showcasing the Razor and the Solius. And, like I said, never been flown before, not even trimmed out. Let's just throw it during the noontime demo and have a good time with them.
Let's talk about your amazing, what's his name, the Extra 300 gentleman.
Oh, Sam.
Sam. Wow.
So Sam Swink, one of our younger pilots, he's just 19 years old. He went with us to Joan Hall, as you guys know.
That was the one that David tried to kill.
We flew the tricopter and played tag, and he hit me with his prop pretty good. But his prop was destroyed, though, so.
Well, he's still flying it, though.
It's funny to just put CA
in the whole thing. But what a talented pilot, and what an amazing new plane.
Yeah. Oh, the Extra 300, so excited about it. A almost ready-to-fly, 3D-capable, but yet very true, very stable aircraft where all you need is a receiver and a battery, and you're going to go out, and you have that capability. The plane we've been flying all week here is a bone stock airplane.
Wow,
in fact, we brought two new ones here when we got here. We put them together, and it would have been helpful if Mike had remembered to pull the instruction manual out of the box. In the end, we didn't even need that. So
that's cool.
It's worked out well.
Watching it fly through the air, it honestly looked like a 70-inch 3D plane.
It really does.
High alpha, the way it transitioned, you swore it was a heavier, bigger airplane.
Yep.
And the Toucan was awesome.
The Toucan's a lot of fun, and I like tricycle gear aircraft, so because it's so much fun doing the touch and goes, and the ground handling is so good. And then once you put 1500 watts in it,
1500,
and it still moves out, and still is easy to fly. Comes in slowly.
We have a good story about that. Mike was flying it yesterday, and tell that story. It was good.
So I'm spotting for Mike. We had a 5S 3850, Thunder Power battery in that, and he's flying it around. I think it was pushing maybe 1,200 watts at that time. And he does a negative G pull out, and I see the canopy launch. And as I'm watching the airplane, I go, Mike says, well, I think it just launched the battery. And then he's like, oh, well, no, I still have it. So he flips the airplane around, starts heading in, just does a nice landing right in front of us. And Ivar, as he touches down, I already start walking down the field to go get the canopy. And then I come back with the canopy. He's like, well, did you get the battery? I'm like, what do you mean, did I get the battery? I go, you flew it back in. He goes, the battery wasn't there. So we learned something that as long as the prop is still spinning, it's actually supplying enough juice to run the receiver and run the batteries. Now, the funny thing was, is the second the battery did eject, the Aurora starts telling us low voltage, low voltage, low voltage. Well, we had a thing full of sensors. So I figured, well, maybe one of the sensors yanked out or something else too. So it's not happy about something. So I didn't think twice about it. Because again, he was flying the airplane back. I mean, I saw him rolled out. I saw him line up for approach and I saw him touch down. And, you know, I was pretty confident the plane didn't land itself in the middle of the runway. I mean, it was even a good landing for Mike.
And it said 3.9 volts.
Yeah, so you look at the Aurora and it said 3.9 volts. And that's what the windmilling effect of the prop and the motor were generating back. And that provided enough to actually land the aircraft.
Truly, I got to thank you because you just gave us an episode.
we need to try that.
Ejecting battery episode.
Yeah, I'm curious to repeat it. And we heard, we never did find the battery. Someone claimed they thought they were shooting a potato gun at them because they heard something go crashing into the bushes.
Possibly could have been.
No, and you know, it's probably $100-something battery.
Wow.
But wouldn't be the first time we destroyed a battery either. So thanks to Thunder Power, but you know they'll get us some batteries here and there, and we push them hard. So, but that makes her again better entertainment value.
Just some stress testing.
Yes, exactly. The airframe held up. Just need to put a little better Velcro on the battery. So
that's a nice little asterisk at the end. Going back to the extra, what battery was in the extra?
So we flew it in the demo today with a 4S 2250.
Okay,
and that gives it 3D capability. You can also fly it on like a 3S 2250 to 2700 milliamp battery. And it's not quite 3D, more pattern, flies lighter. But what makes that airplane so good is it does fly well and smooth and true. And a lot of people like it with the smaller battery because it does fly lighter.
Yeah.
But you don't lose the great flying characteristics. You just don't have the punch of a 3D aircraft.
No wing waggle.
It's just rock awesome. Solid. Yeah.
Very cool. We talked a lot about product. Anything in the future?
We got quite a bit of new stuff coming. Some more chargers. We'll make some announcements here in the next few weeks. iHobby's coming up pretty quick for us, and that's going to a big new product announcement show. New chargers, the Aurora 9X, will begin shipping here in the next couple weeks.
Nice.
We actually have them in stock. We're waiting for the manuals to be printed onto the discs, and then we'll throw the discs into the boxes, and then we'll start shipping them out.
Nice.
So that's pretty close. We'll have a couple new receivers. You know, flybarless receiver for the Aurora system.
What are the difference between the 9 and the new one?
Good question. It's a big technological change. The basic functions of the radio are still the same. But the latency is much lower. So the radio is now faster than the original Aurora 9. The resolution goes to 4096. So the resolution is 4 times greater with the new radio. Another big improvement for the hobby is the Aurora 9X is actually a multi-protocol radio. So along with flying all of the high-tech receivers, it will now fly what's used in the AnyLink. So if you purchase any of the AnyLink airplane, they're the equivalent of a bind-and-fly type airplane, comes with a receiver, comes with a battery. With the Aurora 9X and all future high-tech radios, you punch a button, and it's called the SLT protocol. And the SLT is an open protocol. It's what AnyLink is.
Wow.
The radio will fly that in addition
to... No boxes on the back, no nothing.
No boxes on the back, and it provides another avenue to say, hey, that airplane looks cool. Buy the airplane and tell it, hey, I'm flying the SLT, and we're good to go.
That's really become a standard, too, is people want to go in, they want to purchase an airplane, they want to take their radio, bind it to it, and go fly.
Again, that's part of the reason why we look for something like the Extra. And brought that to market is ready to go, ready to fly in 25 minutes. You still got to add a receiver, but there's almost zero building. In fact, with the Extra, you don't even need glue to put it together.
Nice.
It either screws in or snaps in, and you're ready to go.
And you call it the Weekender series?
It's the Weekender line, so there'll be many more aircraft under the Weekender line. We'll have a what's called a zipper, kind of a mini little racer park flyer type airplane, and then we'll have what's going to be the E-Hawkeye. So we have the Hawkeye, which is a Chuck glider, you know, super durable, made of foam. Well, we have a version of that will be RC. Same size.
Is that the one that was missing an elevator?
Yeah, so we did have one here, but somehow we misplaced the elevator. It's so small that...
There's a lot of conspiracies about where this elevator is.
Could be in the crate, could be in the camper, we're not sure. But I'm sure, you know, right after we don't need it, it'll turn up.
There you go. Very cool. Very cool. Well, Sean, I got to truly thank you for... We had a great weekend with you. Thank you for recommending us to go to Neat.
Thank you for dinner.
Yeah, thank you for dinner. Oh, what was that called? The Mexican Mountain.
And then Mike's dessert. What name did you come up for?
Apple something.
Apple Awesomeness.
Yeah.
It was good.
So Mike
thought he could cook so well.
Oh, he was so tickled because he loves to cook for lots of people. So I'm like, hey, I invited the flight test guys over. Just make more food. And he's like, yay.
We'll eat any of your food. We'll hang out with you anytime, brother.
Yeah, just don't be on a diet. Mike likes to cook with sugar, and I've, you know, I think he was sprinkling like vanilla wafers and some oatmeal cookies on top of that.
that awesomeness,
but yeah, Mike likes to cook with sugar and love. That's what he says.
And guys, if you're hearing some noise right now, that is
a carbon cub
flying over. Takes off in approximately 25 feet and
goes 45 degrees without like half throttle.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
The guy was looping it, so
yeah, he did two loops, basically over the runway as he was leaving the event yesterday. Yeah. So it was quite the entertainment.
Victory loop.
Yep.
Yeah, very, very amazing. So yeah, maybe someday Flight Test can do a review on that one.
We had so much fun last night with the night flying. That Sky Scout, is that the name?
Yep.
He had a pusher prop on it, and there's the... They're like have light up balloons that you should pop, or you're trying to pop. That's like the worst airplane to do that with. And Sam came in second.
Yeah, he still managed to hit to break three balloons.
I think it was four.
I think he got four.
It could have been four.
But
with
the skill to do this, because he was flying, like you said, a pusher prop, he couldn't just go into it.
It's like a 6-inch prop, right?
Yeah.
Five, six inch prop on the back.
I gotta say, he bumped probably 20 balloons. Yeah. Just. I think he bumped every single one, but he only got four.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If he could have gotten some points for actually just hitting the balloon out there at night.
Clear winner.
He'd have been a clear winner, absolutely.
And then you guys turned your wrath on the big wing.
Yeah, we had fun. I gave my Spitfire to Sam. I was like, yeah, try to hit Josh. And you had lights on yours that flickered, or you can turn it on and off and change colors.
They would get close to me, and to order a veil, I'd go in stealth mode. I'd just turn off my lights. then some guy in the back crowd saw what I was doing. He didn't like it. So he painted me with a laser.
Yeah, we're like, yeah, we're going to get him.
He illuminated me like, it was like this green glowing orb.
It's a crazy laser.
It was crazy. I think it should be illegal, especially around us.
And Sam is absolutely fantastic pilot.
Amazing pilot.
True. Yeah.
Amazing fun, too. The evening was a blast.
Yeah, we had a good time.
When we say that we had a great time in the evening, let's just be clear. We were flying planes. Right. You know, people's minds go other places. But we had a great time with you. And from the bottom of our heart, thank you. You've always been a great host.
I'm so glad you guys came to the Neat Fair. It's been so much fun. You made it even more special. Thanks for helping us out in the demo, and just thanks for chilling out with us. And
we'll crash your plane anytime.
Absolutely. we got plenty. So
awesome, brother.
Thanks again, guys.
You got some packing up. We'll let you go.
Thank you.
All right, man. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Yay. So actually, we learned in this interview that a motor, brushless motor, generates its voltage back through certain speed controls. If you don't have a freewheeling diode, it's actually going to generate that voltage back into the receiver and be able to land your plane.
Way to tie it all in.
Well,
awesome. It's like almost like we have a theme today.
We did not plan it that way, honest.
Well, let's go ahead. Let's roll the next interview, and then we'll end with the lightning round. It seems appropriate to end with the lightning round.
It's always good.
So
yes.
We're going to introduce Eric Royer, who is the executive editor of FlyRC.
He's a awesome chap. Too. Yeah, he is a very nice chap.
He was his great son, Daniel, if I remember correctly.
Daniel.
Yeah.
He's like a great memory. Like
He's such a good guy. I hope you get into FB. Oh, I was meant to send you an email. Remind me if you listen to this and I still haven't sent you that email, remind me. Again.
That's like really...
That's highly organized.
That's right a there. Funny way to go by.
I just remembered it.
All right. This is the podcast which will remind you, then email me to remind me to email you.
Yes.
That's good.
So roll that interview.
Eric Royer, everyone.
All right, everyone, welcome back to our next segment of the Flight Test Podcast. We have Eric Royer here from FlyRC, and I have David and Josh here as well.
Hello.
Hey.
And Eric, how has your Neat Fair experience been so far?
It's been great. It's been nice talking to
a lot of our fellow readers and meeting all of the different vendors here. Finally getting to meet you guys.
You've been a voice on the phone and typing on email up until this point. So nice to be able to put a face. And Eric is also here with his wonderful son, Daniel, which really points out what Neat Fair is so great about. That is enjoying it with family.
Yeah, so, definitely.
Great thing. Now, full disclosure, Eric, what is your job?
I am the executive editor for Flyer C Magazine as well as RC Helipilot Magazine.
You're a busy guy.
Yeah.
Very, very busy guy. Eric has blessed us with an amazing opportunity the past, what has it been, about 3 months now total?
Yep. Three issues now.
Amazing opportunity to put some of our products, a.k.a. the Baby Blender, the Cruiser, the Batbone conversion on the Heli magazine. He's given us the opportunity to marry a YouTube video with paper articles.
Yeah.
And it's great. It's a wonderful experience. And brother, from the bottom of our heart, we want to thank you.
Oh, likewise. I mean, it's been great. The reader response we've gotten is amazing. Everybody loves it. A lot of people saying they never heard of you guys before. So that makes me feel good to nice. Let me know we're giving you some new subscribers and new viewers.
And that was one of the greatest things about this. We've been blessed with a lot of new viewers that are new to the hobby. Very, very few people have been very involved in the hobby for 10 plus years really know about what flight test is and what our goals are. And you saw that, and you saw that as a problem, and you immediately came up with a solution to we want to obviously expose the people getting into the hobby to your great content on your magazines, and you want to give us an open door to have access to the great pilots that have been doing this for years.
I appreciate it. I was a little nervous asking you guys to do it initially because I'm like, oh, these guys are amazing online. They're never going to want to work with a magazine. And you were, it was an open door. It was awesome.
Yeah.
So,
and it always will be.
Yeah.
I think it was cool. I think when you and I originally talked about it, you said that you had sent out a link to one of our episodes or something like that. Mm-hmm. I think you said you have like 50 or 60 content contributors.
Yeah.
I think you said there was like two that had heard of us.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that just tells me that there's a lot of opportunity out there. There's a lot of people that, you know, have RC pretty well figured out. You know, they're pretty set in their ways. They know what they like. They know what to do. And they're not necessarily searching online or searching on YouTube for information. So it's cool that you're allowing those people or helping those people to find us too.
That's
cool.
I was pretty happy because I had only heard about you guys 4 months ago.
Oh, wow.
And I've been in the hobby professionally 14 years now.
Wow.
Wow. So when somebody brought it to my attention, I was like, wow, and I've probably watched over 100 of your videos so far. My son watches them all the time. And they're just amazing. The content's awesome. The fact that you guys offer plans for free, our readers love that. So I'm really glad that we're able to work together. And like I said, we saved a spot in every issue if you guys are...
Well, we love it. And the neat thing is with getting a relationship with modelers that have been in for years, they have so much knowledge because they've obviously been doing it for a long time. To get to build a relationship with them means that we get to put more knowledge in for the newbies, for the people just getting into the hobby. And that's what we really need because right now we're, 4 or 5 guys that love the hobby, but we need to get all that information in. And that's what the community is so great about is it's just a melting pot of knowledge.
Yep.
And everyone shares it so freely. So you just took down one hurdle that we had, and we truly are grateful.
Yeah. I'm glad to do it.
That's awesome.
It's awesome.
So what's new for or coming up for Fly RC, if you don't mind us?
We've got, basically, we've got a lot of new reviews. I mean, we're always on the cutting edge of whatever new products are out there. We're pretty excited. We just received some planes from you guys, so we're going to actually do our own reviews of your planes, which will be nice.
Cool. Break out the hot glue gun.
Yeah, yeah. I just bought a hot glue gun the other
nice.
Day. Yeah, my first one. I
How
didn't know
can
what
you
to
not
do.
Own one?
I didn't know what to do with that. I said, wow, it's a hot glue gun. I'm CA epoxy.
You will burn your fingers, I promise you that.
I'm looking forward to it.
There you go.
But no, we're excited about actually doing our own reviews of those. I think we featured the two plans so far, and the articles were from you. And then they had the video to back it. So it'll be kind of nice to do our own spin on it. And we would represent the new person that's finally seeing your planes for the first time.
That'll be a great way to stress test, too, what content we do. We always want to make it as good as we can.
Right.
So it'll be really great to see the goods and the bad so we can hopefully in the future alter that to make it the best it can be.
Yeah. I mean, we watch your videos. You guys are doing this second nature, so it'll be interesting to see us fumble through it.
Wonderful.
Is it really as easy as you guys make it? So,
so what's gonna be your first one? Are you gonna do the Versa or?
I'm thinking the Versa. We'll do that first.
That's and a then, real simple, easy build.
Yeah,
it goes together nice.
Yeah, and then thanks to you, I'm like super into the FPV, now. So we'll be doing a lot more with that. Thanks to David. Even though we never had a chance to actually fly.
Well, we can fix that. It looks like you're going to have to do a road trip now.
Yeah, we're going to have to come out to Ohio. Definitely.
Love that. That'd be cool.
Yeah, very definitely.
Cool. Well, Eric, from the bottom of our heart, we want to thank you for your time, brother. Thank you for the open door you've given us. It's going to be an open door for a very long time.
Yeah.
And look forward to seeing what the future brings.
Likewise. Thank you so much for all your help.
Awesome, awesome. Yeah, great. Well, you're going to pack up now. It's Sunday afternoon.
Gonna head home. Yeah.
Yeah. I think we're all going to be packing up on the one day that it is beautiful, sunny, and calm.
Yeah. It's the nicest day we've had.
It's totally here. Yeah, we have 9.5-hour drive.
Yeah, we apologize if you guys hear some noise in the background. That's actually Neat Fair you're hearing in the background, yeah. So.
And the Hobby King guys and next door are packing up, too. They're making a lot of noises. Sabotar.
we could actually climb through that window and have some fun. We are literally 8 inches from Hobby King's RV. It's pretty funny.
So. Yeah.
Cozy neighbors.
No, it's good stuff. Time to take a Dramamine. Thanks for coming.
Thanks, Sarah. Appreciate you coming on the podcast.
Right. I appreciate it. Thanks. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. So anyway, if you guys liked having some interviews, that's something we wanted to play with.
Yeah.
It's probably something we'll play with in the future, so let us know what you thought of those. We think it's cool to bring you guys just top-notch people from the industry and let you hear a little bit about them and what they're up to. We think that's fun, so if you think it's fun, let us know.
You guys are truly steering the ship with this, so steer
because
where you
we're
want.
Not.
A.K.A. the lightning round, which takes up the majority of our time. But
why don't we just call it the unlightning round?
Yeah, right. We really should. Actually, we got to keep them fast because that means we can answer more people's questions.
Yeah, and go.
Yes. Lightning round. Let's start with, since this is somewhat of an episode about Neat Fair, actually the top rated question at facebook.com/flighttest was, has there been any unexpected backlash from your review of Neat Fair? And the person that submitted the question says, I applaud you for speaking the quote-unquote truth.
Wow.
No.
No.
That was actually exactly what I anticipated and expected, and that was nice.
And actually, it makes me really happy because it means that the people that follow Flight Test, that their hearts are similar to ours.
Yeah. And there was a thread over at RC Groups about that. Pretty quickly. And it was a good discussion. Yeah. Everything. We broke the rules. Not intentionally. But that was not kind of, I don't mind being reprimanded.
Yeah.
But in a better way would be nice.
Correction is always good. Correction keeps things safe. Correction is good.
Yes.
No problem with correction.
Yeah, the way it was handled. So anyway, so no. Next question.
Next question is, when is the next open house?
Probably in a month.
Yeah.
A little less than a month when this comes out, probably 2 or 3 weeks.
Are we going to do it monthly? Is that the plan?
That's the plan. We'll see if that follows through or not.
Well, what we'll do is, regardless if it's a month or if it's quarterly or whatever
it's
doing, we will get it out to you guys sooner. I know that was one complaint, was that it was too short a notice for a lot of people. Yeah. And we respect that. We know we can't travel on short notice either. So.
And by all means, thank you guys from the bottom of our heart for the people that did show up. We thought it'd just be local. People, we didn't count on people coming from Canada.
Yeah,
Keith Brown came from Jersey.
That's crazy.
Louis Russi came from Buffalo, New York.
Just people came from way further than we expected.
It touched us. So guys, thank you.
Thank you very much. I hope you show up next time. We love making memories with you.
And so, like I said, we will try to get the date out sooner.
Lightning.
Okay.
It's so intense.
If you want a radio that is better quality than the Hobby King Turnigy 9X, but is still affordable, what would you recommend?
Everyone's looking at me. Yeah. I would recommend the define affordable.
Affordable,
under $100.
Under
unreasonable.
That's hard.
Oh,
under $150.
The problem is when you get into those numbers, usually the bearings are expensive, and bearings are the things that make the gimbal feel really nice.
Yeah.
If there are quadruple bearings in it, it feels nice. It has a good feeling to it. And usually that's the main thing that you can feel between a high-performance radio and a low-budget one is the feel of the sticks.
I flew a lot of the people that fly out at the church, they have the Hobby King Orange transmitters.
Yeah.
I really like them.
Oh, yeah.
I think they're exceptional.
They're only DSM-2, though, so be
careful
with that.
So don't plan on going to any big flying events without getting shot down.
Or fly far away.
Yeah, but it is an exceptional radio. I like it for just backyard pilots, but really the 9X is probably a pretty good bang for the buck.
Yeah, it is. It is surprisingly powerful in the programming and the open...
open system.
The open firmware for it. It's really cool stuff.
So, a follow-up question by a different community member is, what is your transmitter of choice?
You have a lot.
I'm blessed with a lot of different transmitters. I'm starting to get, it was bipolar, now it's tripolar, I guess you could say, with my transmitters. I'm going to be flying the high-tech Aurora on all my multi-rotors. All my FPV planes, I'm flying the Futaba 8FG. And all my fun foamies, I'm flying, it was a DX8, but Jeff Cash has blessed me with a DX18,
yeah,
which is just crazy. I just can't believe I'm holding this awesome. Now, I have huge monster.
It is enormous. Huge. Transmitter.
It is probably the most comfortable radio for me, though, right now, because I have big hands, and I have these long, creepy fingers.
But even you, with your large hands.
It was a stretch on some of them.
It's a stretch to hit some buttons.
But the comfort, I really like the comfort of the 18, and I use it for general foamies, not because I don't trust it, but just because that's... I figure that's what I love the integrated telemetry with the voltage for the high tech Aurora.
Yeah,
and I love the Futaba 8FG. That
for
was
long range.
Long
it's
range,
absolutely fantastic.
Great system. What do they call it? Protocol, frequency protocol.
It's also they use special chips. The Futaba is actually the RC part is such a small part of what they're doing.
Industry leader as far as cranes, things like that.
Yeah, so they use these systems in cranes before that. So they have really high sensitive 2.4 chips and a really good protocol to follow that.
Yes.
How it works. So lightning.
That's the fast answer.
That's my three. How's that for perfectly correct?
Oh, I didn't answer.
That's true. Yeah, go ahead.
High-tech Aurora 9 because it has the voltage telemetry built into the receiver, which is super nice because I need it. Otherwise, I'm going to crash.
Dun, dun, dun. All right. Is David's tricopter footage usually stabilized in post-production?
No, never, because we don't like spending time on that.
He is that awesome, friends.
No, it's mostly because we're lazy.
And balancing props is probably faster than stabilizing in post-production.
Yeah. Balancing props and properly tuning out the copter is nicer. And I want that swoosh. I fly so swooshy when I fly around and follow stuff that the I tried it a couple of times, but it doesn't stabilize as nice if you're doing swoopy stuff.
In a previous podcast, it was mentioned the possibility of flying or scratch building seminars. What is the timeline on that?
That's still being developed. We want to make sure if we do seminars like that, that they are worth it for you.
Right.
Yeah.
So TBD, I guess, is the answer.
That means to be determined.
Yes, exactly.
So, watch out for that. We have no idea.
Okay. Next question is, can we get an FT Cessna?
FT Cessna.
Ooh.
Well, I'm working on an FT Trainer.
That's what I wrote down.
Yeah,
that'll be kind of fulfilled.
Yeah, I'm working on FT Trainer, but to be honest with you, it's not going towards the Cessna direction. Maybe a bush hopping Cessna, but more actually fun cubbish. Big Fowler flaps, big exaggerated, almost like you took a fun cub and a Telemaster and smashed them together. That's my goal, a workhorse.
But an easy flying high wing, I mean, that kind of fulfills
high
the
wing,
Cessna
light wing
idea.
Loading, great envelope.
Right.
Yeah. So,
cool.
Yeah, no
cool.
Cessna. I'm not much for tail or. Nose gears on swappables because it's a lot of extra work and bracing.
Well, yeah, I'll just skip the landing gear. Go.
I like this question because it just assumes that we're doing it, but this question is, when, not if, will you be doing a world FT tour?
Wow. I love you too, buddy.
when? It's in the future. We'll leave it at that.
Can I gush for just 10 seconds?
Yeah, go do it.
What you guys have done for Flight Test, it's not us, it's you guys and God. We are grateful from the bottom of our hearts. You've taken us to this point. I'm confident with the way you guys are taking us to places. Someday we will be traveling and doing lots of exceptional, wonderful things. But it's not because of us. It's not because of our talents. It's because of you. So from the bottom of my heart and Flight Test hearts, thank you. I could hug the thing right now, but it'd make a noise, right?
That's true. Yeah, I shouldn't do that.
Okay.
Next question is, do you ever get hate mail from the wives or girlfriends of guys you've brought into the
yes.
hobby?
No, I don't. I'm saying yes quickly. Have you gotten hate mail?
No, because I'm not the face of Flight Test.
That's actually true.
Well, here's the funny thing. At the church ministry, I've had wives come up and say, you got my husband into flying. And I go to shake their hands, and they pull it away. What have you done? Because it's a very addictive hobby. But the good thing is I ask, well, what are they doing? Well, they're flying with the kid. Isn't that a good thing? Yes, it is. And then they calm down a little bit. But there are planes everywhere in their houses, and I'm sorry, wives, for that.
Well, at least you're honest.
Yeah.
Next question comes from Fred Provost, who is...
Hi, Fred.
Hi, Fred. Hey, monkey!
Flying monkey.
Flying monkey on our forums, four-mile raider. He had a question, and this is our last question for the lightning round. His question is, as Flight Test grows and matures, do you think you could ever branch off to have a series that focuses solely on more advanced aspects of the RC hobby, such as a more concentrated look at electronics, FPV, flight control boards, programming, etc.?
I like how you said matures.
Yeah.
That's why I got lost.
You got some maturing.
You know, we're blessed with David. David is amazingly talented. I'm a backyard pilot. I'm always going to be a backyard pilot. I'm always going to probably not respect the rules of motors and speed controls and batteries. I just want to have fun with what I have. But we are blessed with David, and we are going to milk as much knowledge out of him as possible.
Before I go back.
Before you go back to Sweden.
Yes, which is the end of April, because people, I answer this quite often, but it's still the end.
Still lingers. Yeah. So the answer is yes and no, maybe so. Yes, we already kind of do that.
And we are working on cloning them. We do have this cool plastic machine. It's like a 3D machine.
Oh.
A 3D printer. So, it's already stole some DNA from me with the spatula.
Once we can print some nerve endings and things like that, we're on a roll.
And so, I mean, in a way, we kind of did what Fred asked about today. I mean, we talked about some fairly advanced stuff. I mean,
that'd be a good avenue.
If you like it, maybe.
Yeah, right, exactly.
So, yeah, actually, I'm looking forward to the feedback on this episode to see if people actually like it or not.
Truthfully, the podcast may be a really good environment for that because we can't take 15 minutes to explain a concept in a show.
Right.
But on a podcast, we can.
That is very true. Okay. Well, I think this was a pretty successful podcast. Thank you to everyone who has rated the podcast on iTunes. I think we're up to 63 ratings in iTunes. Ooh, that's just amazing. And like I said in previous podcasts, that just really helps boost our visibility to people that haven't heard of Flight Test. So if you go to flighttest.com/iTunes and are willing to rate a review, that would help us immensely. So
give us your feedback. Much.
Yes, indeed. Your honest feedback, which I believe we have all 5 stars and 2 4-stars.
Wow.
So yeah.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thank you very much.
I'm going to find you 4 stars.
Yeah. We're going to find both of you.
Thank you very much.
Let's get the Kraken finished off, brother.
Yeah. Okay, so thank you for listening, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
See you in 2 weeks, friends.
See you guys.